million revenue. For the purpose of taking testimony on tax relief for low income, I invite Jim Healy and Chuck Feketoff to come forward. Sorry we're short-handed today, but it seems like this has been a strange day. Please go ahead, identify yourself and.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jim Healy. I'm the Deputy Administrator of the Adult and Family Services Division.
I'm Charles Feketoff from the Oregon Center for Public Health.
Sheriff, I would add that this work is something that grew out of a very intense and prolonged discussion in the Senate Revenue Committee from the 1997 session, which both Jim and Chuck were involved in, led to passage of an earned income tax credit for Oregonians. We've had a number of proposals come before the committee. There was some reference to it in the governor's tax review that we heard about, and that was why Chair Miller has invited our two speakers in to give us some background on that issue.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Chair, thank you. The primary interest of the Adult and Family Services Division in this area stems from our Welfare to Work efforts. As more and more welfare families move into the working world, one of the biggest issues for us is making sure that work pays for them. That's an issue for a couple of reasons, and I think you should have a colored chart that explains a little bit about the Welfare to Work effort. The first block on the left-hand side shows a family of three receiving a TANF, Temporary Assistance to Needy Family, or welfare benefits and food stamp benefits, the little green block on top of that. That's a total of $796 per month in benefits, which puts that family of three at about 69% of the poverty level. The next block over shows that same family working at minimum wage, and then the next block over at $7.08 an hour, the average wage at placement in the job program from public assistance as of the third quarter of 1998. You can see there's a substantial jump in spendable income for families that leave welfare. One of the things that we heard in our recent Ways and Means Subcommittee testimony was even though there is that substantial jump, people still find it very difficult to maintain their low-wage jobs at that income level, and any unexpected expense that comes up jeopardizes that job. We're very interested in making that as dramatic a jump up as possible, especially at those low-wage jobs. The second issue that we've seen as more people have gone from welfare to work is that as their hourly wage increases, there are points for many families, especially those that have childcare, in which their actual spendable income will decrease. In fact, we've had some testimony from folks who said they've literally gone to their employer and said, "Please don't give me that next raise. I can't afford it," because their food stamp benefits may either decrease or go away. Their co-payment for employment-related daycare will increase, and at the same time, their federal earned income tax credit is decreasing. You can see in the chart here, someone that's moved from $8 an hour to $10 an hour has actually seen a significant dip in spendable income. One of the things that we have talked about and spent considerable time on during the governor's tax review policy advisory committee sessions was what to do about that dip. Just as an example, if you look at the second graph that I have there, this is that same family of three with the tax adjustments that are proposed in Senate Bill 2, for instance. As you can see for the lower wage, $6.50, $7.08, $8 an hour, and $10 an hour, there's no difference in their spendable income because, in fact, with the credits that are already available, these families will not owe a state tax, and the SB 2 proposal is not a refundable tax credit, and so those people wouldn't see any benefit. So the benefit in this case starts, at least in the demarcations on this chart, at $12 an hour on up to $16 or $17 an hour. So that's where the non-refundable tax credit has its improvement. Then finally, the third chart demonstrates what would happen if tax relief, in particular the working family credit, were made a refundable credit at the current percentages. And that shows down here a significant improvement, the blue columns being the current and the green and red columns being with a refundable working family credit, shows an improvement at the lower end of the scale, some mitigation of the dip that we see around $10 an hour, but then not much effect at the $12 an hour up arena. During the deliberations of the Policy Advisory Committee on Tax Review, particularly the economic disincentive, or what started out as the self-sufficiency subcommittee early on, we looked at various ways that we could impact that dip. One of those ways was to improve the co-payment structure and employment-related daycare. Overall, because of the numbers of people that will use a tax credit as opposed to the number of families that use employment-related daycare, the subcommittee recommended, and then ultimately the governor recommended, that indeed the best thing to do would be to make the working family credit refundable as the primary alternative to help do that. Of course, neither what's contemplated in Senate Bill 2 nor a refundable working family credit is entertained in the governor's budget at this point. But in terms of what works and what makes sense for low-income families, I think it's safe to say that adding more to the very lowest of the income, certainly from a welfare-to-work perspective and generally a low-income perspective, is certainly a critical thing to do. And I'd be happy to answer any questions or wait for Chuck's presentation.
I think would help be helpful for me. Do you have questions?
The information.
Sure, please.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, member of the committee. My name is Charles Shepetoff from the Oregon Center for Public Policy, and I just want to thank you for the invitation to testify today. My testimony is going to address very briefly the fairness, overall fairness of the Oregon tax system, and I'll turn to how it impacts working low-income families, tax thresholds, tax and the tax burden on the working poor. And I'll describe the two tax credits that were enacted last session, state earned income and the working family credit, and the discussion of those will address the limitations, and I'll address the policy issues raised, like some of the proposals, the two bills that Mr. Neely mentioned, plus Senate Bill 1190, that address those limitations. And I'm going to be using some charts, so if I may, I'm going to stand up and run through them.
My first overhead actually isn't in your packet. It was for the chair, because I know you were on the Human Resources Subcommittee, but this is a wonderful quote by a former Minnesota legislator that had been both on the appropriation side and the revenue side. Often this committee doesn't get to see the poor. Last session, Senator Hartung is a veteran from this committee, the returning person from last session, saw a lot of the advocates for the poor. They spent a significant amount of time on these low-income credits last session. And they really grappled with how to design them and went through a lot of different permutations. The next thing, the chart, which isn't following the written testimony I distributed, is from Citizens for Tax Justice Institute for Economic Policy, a 1996 report called Who Pays, that shows the taxes for tax year 1995. They're in the process of updating it. They hope to have it done and updated based on 1999 law on tax year, and at least for sometime in the year 2000 if all goes well. But while there have been some changes, it still gives a general understanding of our tax system. 3 points I would like to note. First is the top black sections and the white sections are sales and excise tax, like gas taxes and property taxes, and you can see they're both what's commonly called regressive. People at the lowest income group, the first quintile, first 20% of families, have the biggest share of their income goes to property taxes and those small sales and excise taxes than top income group. Next thing it shows is that our income tax system is relatively progressive. The lower income is a smaller share of the income. And the overall tax, however, isn't very progressive. The gray area in the back is the third thing I want to make, which is the sort of a transfer of our taxes to the federal government and taxpayers nationwide by the deduction on property taxes and the deduction for state income taxes paid. When you take out that offset, you account for that offset, you can see low-income Oregonians have a bigger share of their taxes they're paid because they get itemized generally, that's one reason. And then the top 15.41%. Please interrupt the questions as I go.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to turn to the subject of tax burden and tax threshold. Tax threshold is the income at which one starts paying taxes. And this is a summary of a report by the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities based on 1998 tax year. It shows that the tax threshold for a two-parent family of four is $14,200, is the 16th lowest in the nation. You don't want to be lower there. For a single-parent family of three, it's the tie for the 17th lowest. Tax threshold, you got better on that score, the tax threshold score, with the earned income credit. An earned income credit increases the tax threshold. It's a good thing. It targets tax relief at the lowest income. It raises the tax threshold. So our tax threshold went up a little bit because of the earned income credit. I'll get back to the same slide on the initial tax burden. Just let me show you real quickly. If we are the 16th and 17th, to see how other states are, you can see that while Oregon is at $12,300, California is $34,000 on their income tax system, Minnesota $23,000, Rhode Island around $23,000. So the range, besides being relatively relatively low tax threshold, the average is 18, and we're below that. That's for a single-parent family of three, but sometimes it's a typical welfare family, although that's changing. Very quickly, the same chart with nuclear family, the two-parent, two-child family. Again, we're at 16 with a $14,200 the tax threshold. Minnesota, Vermont, other states who we keep it actually sort of an area of welfare reform and helping the poor have higher income tax thresholds. Now they do have sales taxes in those states, I should point out, and that's the reason for showing that first chart on overall tax burden. Sales taxes are inherently regressive and that would probably make ours even worse. But for income taxes, the biggest tax people pay, even in those states, generally that it's still important to look at how we compare our income tax. Next chart shows sort of how we improved over time. So looked at all the states with below poverty thresholds in 1991 and kind of 91 through 98. And you can see Oregon has improved by 4,100. Pennsylvania obviously has seen some significant tax reform for low income folks. So theirs went up by 14,000. Massachusetts went up by 9,000. Iowa by 8,000. So we've had little improvement. The time. Then we're going to look at tax threshold and tax burden. Burden is once you get in the tax house, well, how threshold I like to think of as the doorway, how much you have to bend, and then once you enter, you stand up straight. How low is that ceiling inside that room? The tax burden, they looked at the tax on people at the poverty line. And they used poverty line is a cancer score versus the poverty income guidelines, but they're relatively close. And this shows that for families of four with incomes at the poverty line in 1998, for the ninth highest, on this you don't want to be high, the ninth highest tax, for families of three with incomes at the poverty line were the 14th highest. Again, if you understand what that means as far as relative, the Oregon here at the single parent family of three, 14 highest for Vermont, Minnesota, Massachusetts, Kansas, New York, these eight states have what's called a negative income tax, these 16 states have no income tax for people at the poverty line. The earned income credit is a credit that gives people up to a little over a dollar an hour in wages over the course of the year. It was enjoyed bipartisan support in Congress. It was enacted first in 1975. And the way it works is that it's a different percentage of your income whether you have one child or two or more children. It's a very small credit they added in 1996 for childless working adults. And that's not on this chart. It's a very small credit. Very poor working child. It's a credit that honors work, it supports families staying together, because if you split up, only the people with custody gets the credit. And it's to offset the federal employee taxes like Medicare and Social Security. What happens is you get a percentage of your income, comes in as taxes, you get to a certain income level, and it levels off. And then to avoid what we call in public benefit programs, the cliff effect is scaled down, so it's not like you lose. You get an extra dollar, you lose, you fall off the cliff. And up here, it's around, it's over $3,000 for more than two children. And so it provides a significant benefit. The other thing about the federal income, earned income credit, EIC, is that you can get approximately 40% of it monthly in your paycheck. You fill out a W-5 form, needed the number, and your employer has to give it to you. It basically protects the federal treasury. You're getting your FICA and Medicare and Medicaid payment in advance, essentially. So you're getting about 40% of your earned income credit on a monthly basis. Well, now Jim's chart is assigned the full EIC on a monthly basis, which you can't get. You can take this annualized and divide by 12. So those numbers aren't right as far as that goes. You can get it out about 40% on a monthly basis. Now, when the city last session dealt with the earned income credit and the working family child care credit, I can remember the very first hearing walking down the hall with Senator Baker and saying, Chuck, it can't be refundable. It can't be refundable. You can't afford it. And I kept saying, well, just hang in there, Senator. I know the committee will listen to see why it has to be refundable. You just lower the percent. Figure out how much you can spend, make it refundable, then adjust the percentage accordingly. But if it's not refundable, the benefits don't go to the lowest income people. They also made a refundable credit, and this that left the Senate, also a credit that passed the legislature, was non-refundable. This chart was developed by Ed Waters of the Legislative Brand New on the refundable credit. This is supposed to be sort of flat with a computer glitch. But what this chart shows is a number of things. First, we picked a 5% credit, which is very small. The 1993 tax package left the legislature before we were smart enough to hold out firm for a refundable credit at a 50%, tenfold, earned income credit. But it was non-refundable. It would not have helped real low-income people. We've gotten smarter since 1993. What it shows is that it moved the tax threshold for this family, this is a two-person family, from around a little less than 12,000, 11,500 I think it was, to 13,500 by doing a 5% credit. So move the point at which people start paying taxes. It gives a very small credit to people along this line, and it sort of phases out the same way this one is. The opposite. 5% of your federal credit is very easy to figure out. About 200,000 Oregonians filed for the earned income credit in 1996. Most old year tax year records we have, 201,000. It brings in significantly more money as a federal transfer payment to Oregon than even the welfare block grant. And this isn't like that. You get you those numbers. Now this section here, below the dark line is the current law. This section, the federal earned income credit, people get the money regardless of what their federal tax liability is, refundable credit. this section here is what would have been refunded had it paid a refundable credit, and these people are losing on the benefit. From here to here, they're getting their tax liability is being wiped out. From here back, these people are getting no benefit. And I have another chart to show you in one of the reports I've given you that addresses that. The earned income credit was only 5%, a very small change, and it's a small change in the tax threshold. If you want to increase the tax threshold, the easiest way to do that, and the most targeted way, is to an earned income credit. To increase the personal exemption credit, it won't do it very effectively. 14% of Oregon taxpayers on 14% of the credit, don't get the personal exemption credit because it's not refundable. Most income people don't get it. And other types of, changing the rate from where the rates begin to help the upper income people, and the earned income credit targets it at the lowest level. It's all ringing the bell, right, Senator Hartman?
Yes, very familiar.
And we did a report on the credit, what's the problem with a refundable? You have that, I'm first going to show you the working family credit. Working family credit, what this one shows is people were supposed to get a 40% credit, then it was going to phase down. And the governor's tax they actually discussed was brought to our attention by the representative of the revenue department that these are pretty steep steps, actually. If you earn a dollar more, you lose a lot more of the credit. The one option also is to make it smoother steps. But they were done with only 5 steps. Was one of the ideas was one to keep it more simple. They only wanted the chart to on one page of the tax booklet. So that's sort of a minor issue. But people were supposed to get a 40% credit and then phase down to zero at 200% of poverty. This is 150% of poverty for a three-person family. What does this chart show? This black area is what they're getting in the credit. They're not getting this. The reason is because it's not refundable. Someone at 650, 725, which we picked, we did our report a few weeks ago, and that's actually the average starting wage. The quarter ending December 31st, 1998. For adult and family services, people leave welfare for work. Those folks are getting a small credit.
Look up one.
With in this chart, for instance, instead of getting a 40% credit, the person at 725 is getting a 3% credit. The legislature left counts that we're giving you a 40% of your child care credit. And the person at 1125 is getting a 14% credit instead of a 24% credit. So this is actually what became a regressive credit. The person, if I start working at 650 minimum wage, then Senator Beyer, who's smarter than me, and getting 1125, they have the same age kids in the same child care facility, and he's getting more money back for his child care costs than I am. You know, he has a better ability to pay at 1125. It's just the opposite of what the idea was supposed to be. I was supposed to be treated with a 40%, he's supposed to get 24%, he's getting 14, I'm getting 3. It makes no sense. But it turned it on its head. It also looked at And the way to fix this is to make it refundable. We also looked at the earned income credit. Now, the earned income credit, because it is only 5% credit, virtually anyone working full-time at minimum wage kids gets it. The person who's not getting it are the person, Jim Neely's agency deals with, who leaves public assistance to work mid-year, and they might work full-time, but it's full-time for less than a full year. Or there are people who, former welfare or others, who work part-time, they don't get the full credit. Because it's only 5%, everyone's getting the full credit. And so what we did on this chart is we looked at what happens to someone working half-time, the full year half-time or half a year full-time. It shows that people earning less than around $9 an hour get no credit. Earning less than $9 an hour get no credit. Where if it was refundable, they would. It doesn't matter, by the way, whether you have employment-related daycare. I should point out that I actually get frustrated with the DIP chart. The DIP chart actually, only as Mr. Neely pointed out, only affects a very small percentage of the people with child care, 11,000 or 12,000 families. There's about 200,000 parents in Oregon with kids who are below 30% of poverty. There are 98,000 children in child care that's either registered or licensed. Their agency deals with about 9,000 of them, so about 10. And it's a very small center. So for most people in child care who aren't in the employment-related daycare program, as their income goes up, their wages, their earnings go up. What's causing the dip is essentially the root cause of the high cost of child care, because of the co-payment schedule. Why is there a co-payment schedule as it is? Because the high cost of child care, the state government can't afford to keep the co-payment schedule low enough off the dip. It's very expensive. To fix the problem of the dip, the way the means problem, it's not a tax problem. That was another finding of the governor's tax committee, not a tax code problem, the dip. The chart does show is that child care is a big cost in people's lives. And it does show that the way the means committee has a challenge to try to fix the dip. It's not a tax code issue. And this shows what happens if you're on it for the few people who are on unemployment-related daycare. Now, we looked at Senate Bill 1190, introduced by Senator Shields, takes both credits on earned income in the child care credit, all in one bill like last session, so Senate Bill 1190. Senator Adams introduced Senate Bill 2 and 5, Senate Bill 2 dealing with the work and family credit, and I'll explain that in a moment, and Senate Bill 5, which would increase the earned income credit from a 5% credit to a 10% credit, which would increase Oregon tax threshold. Good side. The benefit, pointed out by the Neely's chart, goes to the upper income people. Doesn't help those part-timers who aren't getting working full time. When we look at more important credits, the fact that the child care cost is so big, it's a bigger dollar amount of people, is the working family credit. Now this line here, this solid line is current law up to here, and then this is the current law. You remember that these people in the 1250 is getting a 14% credit, where this person's only getting a 3% credit. Senator Adams' bill would extend the 40% credit from 150% of poverty to 200%, then phase it down to zero at 250%. And as the new chart shows, it only helps people earning over $12 an hour, not people. It also is not refundable. If it was refundable, the person at 1250 would get a 40% credit. So it's only helping people from around $12 an hour out. And the folks earning less than that are getting no benefit. And more importantly, you see on this chart, no one is getting a 40% child care credit. You all left your child that you passed a 40% child care credit last session. No one gets it. That is not the funding. So, I can tell you, now the has been working on the numbers and they're a little fluid, but the cost of the making the two credits refundable is very close to the cost of extending in the way our President Adams has. This is actually a little more expensive. It's very easy to predict the earned income credit. We can debate about whose federal numbers we should use and how it's going to grow or not, but that's a pretty easy number to get. The working family credit, we don't know how many people are going to use it. I need to be honest with you on that. We have some projections. They're relatively close. We released a new paper today, which on your desk, on federal rules that would, I think, if it's a toss-up, you don't care about whether you're helping the lowest income or the upper income of the poor, the working poor, and the costs are relatively close within a few million dollars. What should push you to go to making them refundable is new federal rules under the 1996, I keep saying new, but not new anymore, 1996 federal welfare law. Federal welfare law said, now the states are getting a block grant, and they don't have to spend money to get federal dollars. They were concerned that states maintain an effort of service to poor children and families. And so they have provisions called a maintenance of effort requirement, MOE. And it is essentially the general rule is you can go down to 80% of your 1994 spending, and under certain conditions you can go down to 75%, and Oregon has been at 75% of what we spent back in 1994. The governor just pulled another $40 million out of AFS's budget, and they're working with on the accounting side to figure out how to still meet maintenance of effort, and they probably will be able to, but there's going to be some risks involved.
The new federal rules that came out April 12th say very plainly, refundable earned income credit and other credits which achieve the purposes of this act, helping people become employed and stay employed, count towards maintenance of effort. So if you're going to spend, let's say it's the $42 million on Senator Shields' bill, or the 50 or so million on Senator Adams' bill, $42 million allows the Neely's agency to report that as maintenance of effort towards our $92 million approximately maintenance of effort requirement each year. $40 million over biennium, $92 is the maintenance of effort each year. So it really helps the agency in meeting federal maintenance of effort requirements. That only the refundable portion can meet MOE. Credits that merely lower taxes that don't provide a refund do not count. And so I've given you a copy of that report. A copy is going to be distributed to your offices as well. And it's hopefully it'll help inform the budget debate as you try to figure out the balance of the state budget and meet our federal MOE requirements, which were somewhat shaken a little bit by the governor's plan. April 9th. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
No. I don't see anybody raise some questions. I'm at information overload. This has been a good presentation, but I don't know where to begin at this point to ask questions. I think that some important information for us to digest.
I agree. As you said, I've been through this before, and I would like very much to have the bill that we sent out of the Senate Revenue Committee last session, or the refundable part of it. But, I don't know where we'll end up on that. I'd like to figure out a way to pay the federal retirees and have an earned income tax credit.
Did we pass out the Senator Adams bill?
No.
No. We still have that.
Tomorrow morning.
Can you say it's how much? What's the delta between the two approaches?
$40 million and $40 million.
$10 million less expensive to do the refundable?
About. Okay, Ed.
You have that charted out. If you were doing that, how does that?
I do have this charted out. That was the last chart.
If you're doing refundable, what does the slope look like? By the dollars.
What does the slope look like? Slope is the gray area. The slope is the refundable credit. The gray area is what people are not getting because it's not the 20. So now people get within the dark area.
Okay, so the dark area, if you were doing the refundable credit,
you're at $7.25 an hour. You get a 40% credit. Okay? Where now you're getting...
So what is...
Okay. And as far as the cost...
So what is the dollar value of that?
Oh, I can give you that. If you turn to actually page... page 4...
Of which?
Of the 16 low-income, Oregon's low-income credit.
Okay.
See the bullet. We figured it out for someone working full-time at $9 an hour.
Okay.
Under the statute, they were supposed to get...
You mean this one? That one?
Yes, that report page 4. Under the statute, working $9 an hour, we used, and I have to pick a spout here, cost. We used $626 a year, which is a number that... AFS has used for years. They started using a lower number, and we'll get into a debate about why, but 626, I mean, the number is just, you would have a credit of, under the, and we should get $3,000 to $5 out of their $7,500 of child care costs. That covers only 8% of their costs because it's non-refundable. That means they're losing, as noted in the, they're getting 20%, the third bullet points out, they're getting 20% of what they're supposed to get. That means they're paying almost $2,400 more for child care. Okay? And the single parent would have to earn over $12 an hour to receive the full amount of statute. So they're losing the difference here.
This applies only, the credit is only against their child care, right?
Only if the credit is
that is 40% of the child care cost, and it's against their tax liability. Okay? And so because they have, at 925, they're getting around a...
But if it's refundable, they get the equivalent of 40%.
Right. So this family, instead of getting $3,005, is getting around $600 for the credit. They're losing $2,400 because it's not refundable. Or they're having to pay $2,400 more for child care than the legislation. Now, as far as the cost between the different bills, Senate Bill 1190, that was a, whatever, Senator Steele's bill, raising the EIC to make it refundable would cost $18 million, the Working Family Credit, $24 million, approximately, $42 million. The Senate President's bill would cost $28 million for the Working Family Credit, $17.1 million for the Earned Income Credit. They're fairly close in the cost.
That's a biennial cost.
Here. Biennial cost. They're fairly close on the cost. One doesn't give the benefits to the lowest income people. It gives it to people earning above $12 an hour. And the one that gives it to the lowest income people helps the Adult and Family Services Department of Human Resources meet their maintenance of effort requirement.
By using the tax credit refundable for child care, you're really targeting it at those who are most needed.
I mean, so people at $12 an hour and up have a hard time paying child care costs, too. I mean, it's an issue that affordability affects people at all income levels.
That's a question of how far you want the slope to go out.
Right. And actually, in the last session, the original bill that Senator Adams put in had the credit 40% or whatever it was up to 100% of poverty. And he talked with the committee about how the poverty numbers on outdated measurement. It was based on a time when food was your biggest expense, and now it's housing and child care. And the committee went with us. Our recommendations have the 40% credit out to 150% of poverty. And poverty is just sort of a nice relative number to compare things with. Food stamps 130% of poverty, for instance. So,
is the earned income credit, is that on top of the payment that TANF recipients get for child care, too?
Once they leave TANF for a job, back in this chart, the blue block is the federal earned income tax credit. So very significant.
That's the federal.
That's the federal. The state credit
grant too.
Right. In fact, in the red block here, the spendable income, we have taken into account their net child care costs after the employment related daycare program has paid part of the child care bill.
Under employment related daycare, it's not a grant. When it's a voucher, they say, for instance, based on your age and your zip, your kids and your zip code, we'll pay the child care provider $500 a month, but based on family's income, the family has to do a copay. The family may have to pay $200 and the agency pays $300.
So in terms of the tax credit, the way that works with that, the tax credit only applies towards the amount that they cash.
That they pay for their copay, that's right. It's actually paid. But it's actually cost incurred. We're actually involved in a little debate with the Revenue Department because the statute as currently exists says it's for people, you can't use it if you're taking care of your own child unless your child's in a licensed or registered facility. Those are sort of technical terms in child care law. Licensed facilities are group homes and child care centers. Registered are what are called family home providers in the registered without inspection program. Those folks have no employees, and so when they're taking care of their own kid, they want to be included in the credit.
I guess I was kind of looking for something like that. It talks about how much money the person would have from the different sources. If you did
I do have that. Yeah, I don't have it in the overhead. I can tell you that. They're not in the employment-related daycare program. On a monthly basis, a chart tries to depict, they get nothing in the Oregon credit. Nothing, because the Oregon credit you only get at the end of the year. That's a monthly spendable income, not annual. And so, on a monthly basis...
And you can't adjust it to how to get... You can't over withhold to the extent that you can...
Frankly, if the credit becomes refundable, I think the revenue department should look at how to give instructions to people who are utilizing it to allow them to take, to suggest they take extra exceptions, but not get in trouble. I mean, they don't want them taking too many exceptions that they'll get hit with a tax bill, and then I don't start having to do estimated taxes and all that. But it's hard, the committee last session did not want to require an advance earned income credit. For such a 5% is so little money, first of all. And they thought it was a burden on the employer.
They haven't done this.
Largest
they make enough money, there's not enough withholding to make up the difference.
Right. Yes. You could, there probably someone could come up with, especially larger families and bigger child care costs, could figure out a way to take an extra exception and not get in trouble. And it would be nice if we could do that, but the way the federal government protects its purse is a schedule on the advance withholding, and it basically makes so that it's no more than Social Security.
That's why these people are not paying any federal income taxes. They're paying...
That's right. The federal income tax code does not tax.
And unemployment?
Yeah, if you have a negative tax, the federal income tax code essentially doesn't tax people in poverty. And they get their FICA back through the earned income credit.
That's actually into poverty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, if you look at the third chart in the handout that I gave you, that shows a working family credit as a refund and lists the various things that at these wage levels they would pay, the FICA they would pay, and down towards the bottom lists child care costs in the last block of numbers there. It shows, and this is a family with $433 in child care bill every month. At $650, they're actually paying $87. $708, $107, and then you see it goes up rather steeply between $8 and $10 an hour from $137 to $393, and then by $12 an hour, they're paying the entire amount.
And I would argue that $433 is too low. The way the agency gets that is they take their cost of the ERDC voucher. That comes up with $433.
Well, actually, that's the average copayment and our average cost per case. Certainly, I would agree with Chuck that this is a representation of a family, and that indeed we have families that have wide ranges of child care costs.
And the ERDC program is helping only 12,000 families. So for the most families, they're paying the full $433, $650, or $708. Most low-income working families are not in ERDC program for a variety of reasons.
At what dollar amount, hourly amount, do they climb out of poverty? 100%.
100% for two kids, one adult, two children. 100% this year is $11,060 a year, $922 a month. Two adults, two children is $13,880 or $1,157 a month. In the 1999 federal poverty income guidelines. Hourly, yes, they do have them converted to hourly.
Indeed.
You bet. Hourly for one adult, two child family is $667 an hour. And for two adult, two child, one worker, it's $803.
If we made it refundable, we pulled it back down to...
Kept it where it is
rather than raising it. Right. We could do it for $10 million less than direct credit. And the proposal that's on the table from the president. That's in
Yes. Yes, you're saying it wrong. To make it refundable at the current law, current levels, 150% of poverty, would cost $24 million. The Senate president's proposal to extend it to up to 250% of poverty and the 40%, theoretical 40% up to 200% of poverty would cost $28 million. So $4 million cheaper to make it refundable and get the benefit to all the people below $12 an hour.
Okay.
Appreciate the help. Any further business to come before the committee this day? Not closed. And for revenue. Thank you kindly for your help this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and happy to come back again.